We're doing Pirkei Avot with the Jewish home. We're up to Perek Dalet Mishnah Yud Gimel. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Eloi says, "Vezahir bit Talmud. Be careful with your learning and your reviewing of Talmud. That a person has to know to be very careful that what he's saying is accurate. And you have to be careful even when you're teaching something that seems minuscule. Be careful how you say it. Be careful to teach it accurately. Be careful that they understand it accurately. Sheshigagat Talmud Ola Zadon. Because if you err, so then that ultimately is considered as though you purposely did something wrong. Because we have a responsibility as a teacher, and everyone within their own home is a teacher, to ensure that what we say is accurate and clear. And at the end of the day, everyone within their home has, you're the rabbi. If you don't know the answer, verify the answer and make sure to get it clear. This leads us into a whole new topic, which is the topic of learning between spouses. People very often envision that they'll have a chavrusa with their wife. For most people, it's a very frustrating experience for numerous reasons. Number one, because the wife expects you to know the answers. And as much as you learn, usually she's going to ask you a few very good questions and you're going to stand there stumped. So it's a good idea to be prepared that you won't know the answers. But you will learn much better because your wife will ask you questions that go to the heart of the matter, to the crux of the matter, and practical questions which you'll have to say, wait a second, let me check, I'll get back to you. We learn things very differently, men and women. Our whole perception of things are different. And we'll go off on a tangent for 1 second. We say in Halacha that women can't testify in court. Now, at first glance, that seems chauvinistic. But in truth, the halacha took into account that women's perspective on life is different than men. It is encompassing. And because it is encompassing, it lacks the cold-hearted detail that's necessary to reach an accurate conclusion. I'll give you an example. A woman comes before the court. And the court says, we understood you witnessed the murder. And the woman says, it was terrible. The poor man, father of 6 children, his wife, a young woman without any source of income. The guy walked in there, drew out a knife, stuck it in his heart. And now 6 poor orphans, a woman, and she starts weeping. A woman that's left all alone. They witnessed the murder before their eyes. How cold-hearted could a man be? And the court tells her, lady, could you tell us what color was the knife? And she looks at them and says, you villains, have you no heart? Didn't I just tell you? 6 orphans and you care about the color of a knife? What's wrong with you? She sees the big picture. We're looking at a small detail.
But if she's the only witness.
Ah, so she is going to see the bigger picture. Her nature is to see life. The nature of a woman is to be practical and real. Our nature is to be limited. We can talk very cold-heartedly about the color of the knife, when he walked in, what time exactly did it happen, and she looks at the court and says, you guys are crazy. You're talking to me about colors of the knife when I'm talking to you about 6 orphans that are sitting there with hungry for food. And we say, yeah, that's a detail. She says, that's not a detail, that's life. She's right and we're right. She's right because that's the way God created women. They have a much broader view than men. They look at the life aspect of things. And that's why when you learn halacha, a man is going to learn the halacha and think he understands it. So he comes home and he tells his wife, I learned you're allowed to cut vegetables, you just can't cut them too small. And she says, okay, explain to me, when I cut salad, what size is called too small? And he stands there and he realizes, hey, I don't know anything. You're right, I don't know what's called too small. I don't know at which point it's called tochen, at which point you're cutting it so small that it's called like you're grinding the salad. I don't know. So what do you know? And then you walk away feeling like a dunce. Because on our level, I understand the theoretical, you cut it, and you can't cut it too small. On her level, she says, wait a second, practically in life, explain to me, what does that mean? And that's why it's very frustrating for men to learn with women. But you'll understand that after she poses the question to you and you go back and verify the halacha, you will have a much better practical understanding of the halacha. But it's two totally different outlooks on the halacha. We can look at it all theoretically, and she takes it down to the bottom line, practical, hands-on life. Wait a second, what does that mean? Which is very good, which is very real. But we have to realize we have a certain responsibility in the home. Shigigat Talmud al-Azadon. Your error in teaching something over, because you weren't careful enough to ensure that you got it right, well, God ultimately considers it as though you did it on purpose, because you have a responsibility. It's as though, olazadon, God considers it as though you purposely sinned. And that's a very weighty responsibility in the home.
But if you misunderstood, like, or if, for instance, you think you've understood it to the full, but there's always more, there's always deeper you can go, so then where is the line? Where do you draw the line of when you know something well enough to teach?
Every person has to draw their line, but God doesn't hold us to a measurement that we can't live by. Once you've done the best you could, fine. No one expects more than that.
Depends on your life.
You just have to do the best you can. But you do have to do the best you can to understand and learn and ensure that you're teaching it accurately and correctly.
But if the best you can is still a slight misrepresentation.
So sometimes it's a good idea to bring the wife along. My wife came with me more than once to the rabbi. Different rabbis at different occasions. When it was Rav David Feinstein, we went together to him at least once. We had certain questions. I wanted her to hear the answers. I wanted to make sure she heard it, to make sure that I understood it correctly. When it was Rav Halberstam Zatzal, she came at least once. I think she came even twice or three times. When there were major questions that affected the family, I wanted to make sure. And then recently there was a big question that would affect our family. I reviewed with her three times. I took notes exactly how she thought it should be presented to make sure. She wanted me to present the question. I wanted to make sure I was presenting it accurately, so I knew how I thought it should be presented, but I wanted to hear how she thought it should be presented too, because men and women see things from very different angles. We see the same family, we see the same question, but the way I'm going to say it is not going to be the way she would say it. And there's a tremendous asset to that broader view, that view that encompasses life, real life, as opposed to our theoretical male view that always talks theory, We could talk about the color of the knife, and we don't really see the orphans. Yeah, we understand they need to be taken care of, but we don't see it. She sees it. It's alive, because she sees life. Rabbi Shimon says... And Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah classically is Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Shelosha ketarim him. There are three crowns that are mentioned in the Torah. Three areas that the Torah holds us responsible to give honor to. Keter Torah, one is the crown of Torah. The Torah says we have to honor a person who has acquired Torah. V'adata penei zaken. Our tradition is that zaken over here is an acronym. It stands for Zeh Kana Chochmah. One who has acquired wisdom. Keter Kuna, the crown of the priesthood, the Kohanim. The Torah says, V'kidashto, you have to treat him with holiness, treat him with honor. V'keter Malchut, and the crown of the kingship, that we have a responsibility to treat the king with respect, with revere. And then the Mishnah says, so these are the three crowns mentioned in the Torah. V'keter Shem Tov, Ole al gabei hin, the crown that's not even mentioned in the Torah, the crown that surpasses all three, is the crown of a good name. Now, the word ole al gabei hin could also be understood as worn on top of them. Because if you have a Talmid Chacham, so he has the crown of Torah, but he doesn't have a good name, people don't like him, he has a bad reputation. So then the Talmud says, halachically, you don't have to respect him. If there's a Talmud Chacham that people hate, that people speak badly about, you don't owe him that respect. If you have a Kohen Gadol, and that Kohen Gadol has a bad reputation, he behaves improperly, and the same thing with the king, it's only if he's behaving the way the Torah expects him to behave. The first three crowns, although they're mentioned in the Torah, it's only when Keter Shem Tov, when the crown of a good name envelops them, Ole al Gabein, If we have a king that doesn't behave the way the Torah wants him to, we don't have the obligation to revere him, to honor him. He might kill us. You know, he's still the king. Might not be smart of us to treat him derisively, but at the end of the day, halachically, we are not obligated to honor him. Now, if that's the way it works with regards to the crowns of Torah, priesthood, and kingship, how much more so in interpersonal relationships? Very often, one of the areas that are frustrating for men in a marriage is the feeling that they're not respected in their home. And the Mishnah is teaching us something about respect. The Mishnah is telling us that respect is supposed to stem from the fact that they value you, you have a good name. A good name comes from being a good person. And whether a person is valued in his home or not is going to be the great weight that stands behind the question of whether they respect him or not. Sometimes people think they'll respect me if I'm stringent in Torah, they'll respect me if I take myself very seriously, they'll respect me if I make $1 million. No. They'll respect you if they value you as a human being. And that's the Mishnah is teaching us that even the crowns mentioned in the Torah, they only gain respect when they have Keter Shem Tov Ole Al Gabeyin, when they have the crown of the good name that envelops them. That is the key.
Also through the action, Sasha, through his actions, no?
The actions, but then the good name is synonymous with the good actions. That's the idea. The good actions are what acquire the good name. This is something which is a little difficult. I can only say that sometimes you have two people who both are good people, and they're both frustrated because each one feels that they're not getting the appreciation, recognition, respect they should be getting from the other one. And it's not enough to have a good reputation and be a good person. There's one more thing that helps, and that is to give respect, to give appreciation. There's a saying that if you run away from honor, honor will come after you. So a guy once came to the rabbi and said, I'm running away, but it's not coming. So the rabbi says, you're running away, but you're always looking over your shoulder. And the same thing is true here. Respect is something that has to be given. Maimonides says in the relationship between a servant and his master, the servant should treat him as a master and the master should treat him as a brother. Now you understand that if the servant is demanding, treat me like a brother, he's not doing his end of the deal. He's supposed to treat him like a master. If the master is demanding, treat me like a servant, he's not doing his end of the deal. He's not treating him like a brother. There are relationships that only work when you do the giving, then the other side's going to have to do the giving. But you can't take what the other side has to give. You have to give what you have to give. And the same thing is true within a marriage. If you get into the habit of showing appreciation, of showing a recognition for the good person that your spouse is, so then with time the spouse will learn and will in turn also give that recognition to you. But if you're both good people, yet each one is living in that insatiable hunger for recognition, for appreciation, so then it's cyclical. And you can't break out of it. And the fact that you're a good person is not going to be enough. It has to be not only that you're a good person, but that you also know how to show that appreciation to your spouse for their being a good person. And then with time, then you start developing that cycle of showing appreciation, of recognizing one another, the positive that's within one another. I'm with you.
And sometimes you can also feel appreciation for someone when you don't really need that person. Sometimes I hear guys in this year, and all my entire life, you know, they want their mamas for them to iron and cook. And also they want wives, so it seems so, for them to cook and to clean and take care of them. So how can you really recognize love you for a friend, for a wife, for a mother, for a sister, brother, if, you know, I think you can only recognize a person when you don't need them. Because these are external things, right? See, like the real feeling of the person, what's inner value of the person. That I think when you attain a certain level and you see the person, you start to see who the person is. You know?
I could answer you, but our time is up. So first, whoever wants should leave. And I'll try to answer you, but it's a slightly long answer, so I just don't want to hold people beyond what they want. Okay, so remind me on Thursday night. Bring it up, and Bezat Shem, we'll come back to this.